Now, you have received update 972, and I like to just go briefly over some of the items we have listed and then make some additional elaborating comments. First, you have in this update an editorial by Brian Gale from the United Kingdom, and I just like to hit a few highlights from this editorial. He says, "We cannot keep people from being offended, particularly when they are intent of being offended. A little later, we know there will be many who will be offended by what we have to say. A little later, we have a job to do, and our preaching the news of the soon coming kingdom of God may offend some, although most will not be in the least interested. And then finally, do we cause offense? If we don't, we are not doing our job. It's not that we are looking to cause offense, but the truth of God offends many people." But he goes on to explain that this cannot discourage us, prevent us from doing what we need to do. Cry aloud, spare not, show my people their sins and transgressions. And that's what we are pretty much doing week in our update, in our current events, in our Bible study, and even the announcement regarding the work, if people have eyes to see and ears to hear. When it comes to the current events, we are going into quite a few developments, including North Korea warning the United States, a deteriorating relationship between Russia and the West, the problematic withdrawal of U.S. troops from Afghanistan. And that's an issue. You can look at this either way. There's no solution to the problem, one way or the other. We also then refer to our new Standing Watch program, which is titled Catholic Politicians' Hypocrisy on Abortion Rights. And I'd just like to read the summary of that program. High-ranking Catholic politicians may speak against abortion in private, but support it in public. The Catholic Church condemns abortion and is highly critical of devout practicing Catholics such as Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, Andrew Cuomo, Patrick Leahy, and others who officially uphold a pro-choice position. But is abortion really wrong, and does God prohibit it? Of course, you should know the answer to that, but in the program we are going into those issues. Now, going back to our summary of the current events, we're talking about the unconstitutional raid of Trump's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, new comments by Trump pertaining to the 2020 election, his plans for the future, as well as a decision in Facebook's oversight board to uphold, at least for the time being, the indefinite ban on Donald Trump. When I heard originally that the Supreme Court was making a decision, I thought about the United States Supreme Court, until I learned it's the semi-independent, quote-unquote, Supreme Court of Facebook. So then we are talking about Europe's plan to spend almost $8 billion on military projects. And then we are talking about the fear of civil war in France and a holy religious war in Jerusalem. And, of course, then we are addressing the ever-changing prognostications and measures of governments and scientists pertaining to the COVID-19, including mask mandates, vaccine passports, herd immunity. And we are also addressing persecution all over the world when it comes to the Christian religion. Now, I like to focus on the article about religious war in Jerusalem. We quote an article by Israel 365, which was dated May 2, and which said, "Fatah is apparently determined to upgrade the recent violence into a religious war. The speaker of this Fatah movement claims that Israel is Judaizing Jerusalem, making it Israeli, and preventing its original residents from enjoying freedom of worship during the Ramadan." And then he called on all Arabs and Muslims to act to save the holy city from the clutches of the occupation and its colonialist occupying racist policy. Now, that was May 2. In the meantime, many more developments have taken place. A new update, we most certainly will talk about that, but I have already here excerpts from some articles which were published on May 7 and May 8. And you probably have heard about the terrible situation on the Temple Mount, which is taking place as we speak. And they are expecting a lot more violence in the days to come. Now, there was violence at the Temple Mount at the end of Ramadan on Friday, involving Jerusalem's Al-Aqsa Mosque. It says that about 205 Palestinians were injured. At least 17 police officers were injured, the Israeli police officers. And, of course, the whole world is again condemning Israel for the violence, even though they didn't start it. The Muslims started it. It has also a lot to do with the proposed eviction of some Palestinians in Israel's occupied territory. It says in one of the articles in Reuters, dated May 7, that Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas said he held Israel responsible for the dangerous developments and sinful attacks taking place in the Holy City, and called on the Security Council to hold an urgent session on the issue. The Jerusalem Post reported that it was actually the Palestinians who started the violence, and the Israeli police responded, but they are not allowed to go near the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And Jordan condemned Israel. Qatar condemned Israel. It says they went on to call for the international community to act to stop Israeli harm of the Palestinian people. Associated Press pointed out that the Al-Aqsa Mosque is the third holiest site in Islam. The site is also the holiest site for Jews, who refer to it as the Temple Mount and revere it as the spot where the biblical temples stood. Now, some question that, but the Jews believe it, that where the Al-Aqsa Mosque is today, that is where the temples stood. Now, you know what that means, because the third temple is going to be built on the spot where the previous two temples stood. Of course, Iran, it says the arch enemy of Israel, encouraged the violence. So they apparently are somewhat behind it too. Deutsche Welle wrote that the United Nations urged Israel on Friday to call off the forced evictions in East Jerusalem, warning that its actions could amount to war crimes. Israel also received criticism over a decision to build 540 settlements in the West Bank. Now notice who is all criticizing Israel. Germany, the UK, France, Spain, and Italy. Then it goes on to say by The Guardian that claims for calm and restraint poured in on Friday from the United States and the United Nations, with others, including the European Union and Jordan, voicing alarm at the possible evictions. And so the Supreme Court in Israel is going to hear the case on Monday, which is the same day that Israel marks Jerusalem Day, which is its annual celebration of capture of East Jerusalem during the 1967 Middle East War. So depending on how that goes, we can see that violence is erupting. It's going to erupt more and more. Another article by the Allgemeine. Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates on Saturday condemned Israel's actions, including the plan to evict and also the violence on the Temple Mount. And I found this interesting, this comment. The United Arab Emirates, which normalized relations with Israel last year, strongly condemned the clashes and the potential evictions. Saudi Arabia, Islam's birthplace, has long championed the Palestinian cause and shunned official contacts with Israel. They quietly acquiesced to the so-called Abraham Accords, but stopped short of endorsing them. Now, that was clear to us from the outset, and we have also made this very clear in writing, that this Abraham Accords, this peace treaty between Israel and some of the Arab nations, will amount to nothing. It will absolutely be a futile exercise, and sure enough, we go again. Now, why is this important in light of what I'm going to say in a few minutes? It's important because you cannot look at these events in an isolated fashion. They are to be seen in connection with what we said earlier, that Europe is involved in building up the defense system. Now, before I go into that, you probably heard about the situation in Jersey, in the channel over there between France and Britain, about fishing rights. And the French fishermen were protesting there, sending a whole group of boats over there, and the British government sent two war vessels in order to stop that demonstration. And we're talking about warships armed with 20 millimeter cannons. They can fire 700 rounds of ammunition a minute at a range of 1,300 yards. So this was quite an interesting thing, and that what we talked about is an act of war by France with Britain's response. So at this point, it calmed down somewhat, but it's not over yet at all. I mean, we will be seeing more and more confrontations between Britain on the one hand and continental Europe on the other hand. President Emmanuel Macron accused the United States and Great Britain of illegally dealing with vaccines which they should distribute to other nations, including France. So it's going on and on. The hostilities have just begun, if you please, between Britain and continental Europe after Brexit. But now you hear about Europe is preparing an army. And you read an article here, you read an article there. What I'm going to do right now is to read to you an article which was published this morning, or yesterday actually, by the EU Reporter, which puts it all together very nicely. Somebody from Germany sent me that article. I'd like to read it to you because I think if you hear that, you can put the pieces together, and you should know what it means. Once Europe has a powerful army, you will have 10 nations or groups of nations who will give their power and their authority, including over the army, to a very charismatic political military leader. And when that happens, that European power will invade Jerusalem, will invade the Middle East, will try to create peace in this area over there after the Jews have already started their animal sacrifices. And they will come and suppress that. See, the antagonism of the world against Israel is already there. It doesn't take much to imagine how it can very quickly develop. Let me read from this article now. And you tell me whether this points at anything else but the development of a very strong and powerful EU army. While there is no EU army, and defense remains exclusively a matter of member states, the EU has recently taken big steps to boost defense cooperation. Since 2016, there has been significant progress in the area of EU security and defense, with several concrete initiatives to encourage cooperation and reinforce Europe's capacity to defend itself. Europeans expect the EU to guarantee security and peace. Now, the following figures were quite interesting to me. 75%, are in favor of a common EU defense and security policy, and a majority, 55%, were in favor of creating an EU army, according to a poll in 2017. More recently, that is in 2018, 68% of Europeans said they would like the EU to do more on defense. EU leaders realize that no EU country can tackle the current security threats in isolation. For example, French President Macron called for a joint European military project. In 2017, while German Chancellor Merkel said we ought to work on the vision of one day establishing a proper European army in November 2018. Moving towards a security and defense union has been one of the priorities of the von der Leyen Commission. Now she's in charge of pretty much the European defense system. In recent years, the EU has begun to implement ambitious initiatives to provide more resources, stimulate efficiency, facilitate cooperation, and support the development of capabilities. Now, I wonder how many actually realize what all has been established already. This article lists it all. Permanent Structured Cooperation, it's called PESCO, was launched in December of 2017. And 25 EU countries are participating as of June 2019. It currently operates on the basis of 47 collaborative projects with binding commitments. That's just one. Then we have the EDF, which is the European Defense Fund, was launched in June of 2017. It is the first time the EU budget is used to co-fund defense cooperation. On April 29, 2021, just a few days ago, MEPs agreed to fund the flagship instrument with a budget of almost 8 billion euros as part of the EU's long-term budget from 2021 to 2027. The fund will complement national investments and provide both practical and financial incentives for collaborative research, joint development, and acquisition of defense equipment and technology. Then we have a plan to facilitate military mobility within and across the EU to make it possible for military personnel and equipment to act faster in response to crises. Then it says making the financing of civilian and military missions and operations more effective. The EU has currently 17 such missions on three continents, with a wide range of mandates and deploying more than 6,000 civilian and military personnel. But it doesn't stop here. It goes on. Since June 2017, there is a new command and control of structure, MPCC, to improve the EU's crisis management. Now, listen to this. EU countries collectively, taking them all together, are the second largest defense spender in the world, the United States. But an estimated 26.4 million euros is wasted every year due to duplication, overcapacity, and barriers to procurement. As a result, more than six times as many defense systems are used in Europe than in the United States. So they come to the realization, well, we've got to do something about this. We have to get a plan where all of this is combined. And then pretty soon it will be the most powerful military in the world, even in front of the United States. And this article says Europe has to act fast because if Europe is to compete worldwide, it will need to pool and integrate its best capabilities, as it is estimated that by 2025, China will become the second largest defense spender in the world after the United States. And then it concludes by saying this. The European Parliament has repeatedly called for fully using the potential of the Lisbon Treaty, which is based on the Treaty of Rome, to use those provisions to work towards a European defense union, a European army. Now, if you can hear those facts and you can see what's happening, then I believe you are not alert enough. It's very clear what's happening. It's very clear what they are trying to do, something which we have been telling you for how many decades it's going to happen. You know, when Mr. Armstrong talked about this, this was way in the future. Now it's very close to reality. And I don't want to give you any dates. I don't know when it's going to happen. But I do believe that's probably going to happen much sooner than many people realize. And of course, when that happens, this military, economic, political power, working hand in hand with a religious power, will impose the mark of the beast on the people. And so we need to know what the mark of the beast is. And the Q&A in this update is asking that question. What is and what isn't the mark of the beast? And you most certainly should read that, because there's all kinds of confusion about this issue. I have recently given a sermon where people are telling you that the mark of the beast isn't even in effect yet, which is another blatant nonsense. But some people are looking at the current situation with the coronavirus. They're talking about wearing masks or not wearing masks. They're talking about getting vaccinated or not getting vaccinated. And they equate that with the mark of the beast. That's not the mark of the beast either. We got to understand what the mark of the beast really is. Now, after having published this article, and after actually having given a sermon on this topic in Germany, I received some negative responses. People don't agree. They have their own ideas, their own opinions. To some, we are too conservative because we point out problems with the coronavirus restrictions. To others, we are too liberal because we are not enforcing on the church membership what they need to do. You must not get vaccinated. You must not wear a mask. No, we're not going to do this either way. It's up to you. You have to make an individual decision based on what you understand, right? We are not here to tell you you have to do this or you must not do that. It's up to you. No, some people don't like that. Some people want the church to make a finding and a pronouncement, you must do this, you must do that. We are not doing that. Sorry. You have to do it. Now, of course, you have to do it based on your own individual personal research and your own individual personal circumstance. And then you make the decision, whether you like that or whether some like that or don't. And so then we also, in our work section, are referring to the Standing Watch program. We are referring to the tech meeting we had last Sunday, hosted by Eric Rank. We have reference here to the German sermon I just talked about. The English title would be What the Mark of the Beast Is Not is in print, and then, or in parentheses. Then we have a sermonette posted by Mark Fuller. The title in English would be Jesus Christ, the Redeemer of Humanity. And then, of course, the last news and prophecy comments by myself were posted, and also the sermon by Michael Link was posted which he gave last Sabbath, on Paul's challenges. And that's pretty much all the comments I have today, but I would encourage you to read, if you haven't already done so, this update, and also the next one, especially when it comes also to the current events, quite succinctly and diligently, because I mentioned Christian persecution. In the next update, it's going to be an article, I want to just say this, about incredible, I mean really, literally, incredible Christian persecution in Finland. In Finland. And you wouldn't believe what is happening there. Finland is being run by the Lutheran Church, pretty much, the Protestant Church. And you look at that liberal viewpoint. Of course, this has to do with homosexuality. And somebody, a member of parliament, who is even a member of the Lutheran Church, is now being prosecuted for reading statements from the Bible about homosexuality. Oh, that's not allowed. That's hate speech, right? You have that here. We talked about Canada in the last update, or this update rather. We talked about England. We could talk about America. We could talk about the rest of Europe. It's happening all over the place. You're not allowed any longer to quote the Bible. That's hate speech. Then you hear about the incredible suppression of viewpoints on Facebook, on Twitter, on other places. I mean, it's dictatorial. And even not just the Republicans, but also the Democrats now become very concerned about Facebook's power. And they're saying, oh, we have to do something to stop them because this goes far beyond what we should allow. But what are they going to do? They got to somehow enact a law. Well, good luck if you look at our Congress today, whether they can agree on anything. So it's being realized more and more people are being banned for what the Bible says, and of course they're being even prosecuted in some country. That is part of the mark of the beast, if you want to know what it is.